Okay, this is not a drill. Take cover. Welcome to Caching in the Northwest, the only podcast dedicated to geocaching in the great Pacific Northwest. We'll talk about caches and cachers unique to this little corner of the continent tonight. So, while you're sending erroneous text alerts, we'll be caching in the Northwest.
And we can't do that, even if this is a test, without bringing in our tech challenge chimp. Some say he has some kind of mystical power over squirrels. And others say he homebrews his own gasoline. All we know is he's called Land Monkey.
Let me just tell you, those are two things you should never mix. All right. Now, quick reminder that we appreciate the support of our patrons who help to keep this podcast coming right into your very earbuds each and every week. And we thank you very much for doing that. If you want to know more about supporting the show, click the Patreon link on the cachingnw.com website.
That's right. And for tonight's show, we're going to bring you one of the geek boys and friend of the podcast, Kev MacD, to introduce us to GSEC. Welcome, Kevin. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much for the invite.
Even if I did stumble over my words.
Oh, that's all right. It'll get worse. Don't worry.
Okay.
Yeah, and thank you, Kevin. It's great to have you on the show tonight. And folks, a reminder, if there's some sort of milestone cache you're celebrating, why not call it into 253-693-TFTV and share it with the Northwest community. You know, you can even use the voicemail tool on our website. And a reminder to send in your geocaching log of the week, or low, so that we can share it with everybody else.
We love your glows. Send in your glows. Anybody send in a glow this week? Yes, we did. This one was submitted by UDAC. GLR4YF9Y. That's kind of a tongue twister if you say it too fast. So this one is called Tour de Golita. And it reads, first things first, kudos to Hola Zola and company for putting together a great adventure for us all to enjoy. They obviously spent countless hours designing and implementing this romp around the town, and the ease with which it all fell together was proof of their work. The spiders from Mars, which is Tropical Joe, QB37, RC Ken, and ITV guy, had a blast careening around Greater Goleta in search of all sorts of esoteric photos and thingies, and managed to find enough to take home the first prize of a genuine Goleta lemon. Some of which, by the way, also turned up in some really good lemon bars. We ended up with 33 photos, 165 token points, and all but 6 scavenger items. Okay, 7. We had a seahorse, a carved horse, and a sawhorse. Surely one of those should have been acceptable. Oh, well. Anyway, thanks again to the organizers as well as all the cashews who took part in this wonderful event.
Thank you so much, UDAC. And don't forget, as both of my wonderful co-hosts mentioned, we need your glows. So you can call them in to 253-693-TFTC. You can email them to feedback@cachingnw.com. However you want to get us your glows, we want to read them right here on the show.
We really, 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 really do. So, you know, give us a call. Talk to us. Leave us a little message. Tell us how much you love us. Well, tell us how much you love Jim.
Man. All right.
Anyways, you know what? We've got a little bit of news. We aren't going to have a ton of news. We've got a bunch of stuff we're going to talk about in the after show.
The after show.
But the what I did want to
think. Sorry, I didn't realize I had to wave my arms when that happened.
It's like Kermit.
All right.
Hey ho, it's the after show.
All right. I did want to share a little bit of news. Anybody who follows me on Twitter may have seen me retweet this. If you follow geocaching.com on Twitter, you may have seen them tweet it in the first place, although I think they actually retweeted it and I retweeted the retweet. But anyways, there's this thing called Solver. It's a film. And, you know, if you want to find out more, you can go to Instagram.com/solverfilm, one word. So the little background here I have is when Luke Williams arrives at his late grandfather's cabin, he discovers a mysterious puzzle leading to a dangerous secret. And that's all we know. But they've been sort of building up a little bit of whatever this movie is about, which is apparently about Luke Williams arriving at his late grandfather's cabin and discovering a mysterious puzzle leading to a dangerous secret. But what they've been doing to promote this is they've got pieces or little clips on their Instagram account of either video clips or photos of a puzzle that they're trying to get people to try and solve piece by piece. So that's kind of a neat idea for a film. And I guess, you know, I can definitely see the geocaching connection there. Mm-hmm. It's put together by some folks called Empire Builder Productions. It's their premier feature. It's they say it's crafted differently than your typical Hollywood fare from top to bottom. There's no CGI. They've gone to old school filmmaking techniques with handcrafted props, camera angles, etc. They've built a series of puzzles and machines that actually work and are included into the film, and was filmed in real places with real history. So it's kind of neat. So it sounds interesting. I'm going to keep my eye on it and see what happens. It's going to have limited release in theaters across North America, I think at the end of the month, if I'm not mistaken. But I've reached out to the guys at Empire Builder Productions to see if they want to come on the podcast. So I'm just waiting to hear back.
Cool. Why wouldn't they, actually?
Well, you know, all the cool squirrels want to be on the
You read that introduction about his late grandfather's cabin, and I wished I had a soundboard here to do the dun, dun, dun.
Thank you.
Next time.
Next time.
Next time we hear about it, something on the ninth step in. Okay, so let's jump off that topic and dive right into tonight's topic. Kevin, welcome again. And let's just jump right in. Can you explain what the heck GSAC is? GSAC? GSAC?
GSAC. Thanks, Jim.
GSAC?
GSAC? GSEC? Amazeballs? I'm not sure. GSAC, G-S-A-K, the Geocaching Swiss Army Knife. It's a Windows-based program. It's designed for geocaching. It's basically a database. It allows you to search and analyze. It has connections to geocaching.com and to a lot of the standard GPS-R units. And it has output. So you can bring caches in, try and find caches you want to find, and output them again to your unit.
Output it to your unit. That's funny.
Output it to your unit. Yeah, there you go. Out to your GPS. Or you can output it as a GPX file and bring it into your Android phone or your iPhone.
Awesome.
All right. This is a family-friendly show. Let's keep it that way.
All right. Well, you know what, Kevin? What would a geocacher need to know about GSAC in order to use it?
Well, it's not a need to know. It's a you could probably make some use out of it type thing. If you go and look for two or three or four geocaches a week, geocaches. Hey, I just came up with it. Quick.
Copy. Go register geocaches.com right now.
Geocaches. Yeah, there you go. yeah, if you do three or four or five geocaches a week, this is probably overkill for you. If you go out and you look for 10 caches a couple of times a week, that sort of thing, this could be very, very useful for you. And it has some very simple functions to allow you to log caches automatically. And it does a number of other things. I know the Land Monkeys use it for their statistics, and you have quite a great statistics page there. Land Monkey.
Thanks. Well, that's a lot of fun to play around with.
GSAC for that, right?
Yeah, I do.
So awesome. How do you get GSAC? I mean, it sounds kind of like a communicable disease. And which, I'm sorry, I have GSAC. I can't, or AK, I can't come close to you right now. And what computers can you get it to run?
You make penicillin out of mold. You make this out of cache mold.
SQL. Yeah.
I like it.
There's lots of that.
Yeah.
It gets rid of your GSAC instantly. No, GSAC, it's a Windows application. You go to gsac.net, and again, it's gsak.net. It allows you to use it for 21 days, and then it starts to nag you. It starts to nag you for a bit of a payment. But it's easy enough to get. It's easy enough to download. And if you run a Mac, you can run the Windows emulator in the Mac. And there's been lots of people have been able to get that to work.
Okay. And I assume Wine would work under Linux
that's
as well.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah. Can it run under Wine?
Yes, I believe that's what most people are using with their Macs.
Great, because the box said install Windows 8 or better, so I installed Linux. So is this going to be easy to use? I mean, it sounds really complicated already with emulators and stuff. Do we need a PhD, which is I think stands for Push Here Dummy? You know, why don't I just use geocaching.com to find my geocaches?
It can be very complicated to use. It can be very simple to use. I guess it depends on how to use it. The base features are pretty friendly, but it has lots of stuff. As the designers of this program added more stuff to it, I wish there was a sound effect for stuff, but there you go. As they add more stuff, the program becomes more and more complicated. But if you're a little bit patient in getting it set up and you don't get lost in the complicated online discussions about all the things it could do and just stick to the few things that, you know, you might want it to do, it definitely can be done.
Nice. I think from my experience with it, it was a little daunting. Even being a tech guy, it was a little daunting at first when I downloaded it, because it doesn't have a wizard, right? When you launch it, it doesn't. This is the first time you're running GSAC. Mm-hmm. But
looks like you're trying to create a database.
Yeah, but there is a lot of information out there, and as Kevin was saying, even if you go onto the forums and just search the quick how do I get my first database loaded, things like that, you can just get it up and going fairly easily. It's not too bad, but I think you've made a really good point, Kevin, that it's really intended for somebody who wants to sort of roll up their sleeves and get into figuring things out with geocaching, as opposed to just doing it as a rarely occasional hobby.
It's definitely not a rarely occasional hobby type program. It's a bit of a dragon to, you know, capture and get chained to the castle. Then you have to keep feeding. You have to keep it up to date. You're essentially running your own database of caches. And it's very, very powerful. But if you don't keep it up to date, caches change. There's new logs that have been added. You find new caches. And if you start asking it questions based on old data, then you're going to get old answers. You still don't qualify for that challenge because you haven't given it all the data. And I keep going at it and telling it to go out to geocaching.com, getting your latest finds, getting the latest caches. And then it really depends on what you're trying to get it to do. It has this thing called macros, which are little programs that people write that you can add. There's hundreds of macros available. The statistics that LandMonkey does is based on a macro that he's installed into GSAC. And it can do amazing things. If I wanted to find out the caches that the four of us haven't found, I could do that. I could say, let's build a geocaching day where we only cache ones that none of us have found.
Nice.
The only way that that works is if I have all of your logs imported into it. And that's the only way I can tell whether you found the caches. So
right, that makes sense. Kevin, you mentioned earlier that after 21 or whatever the number was days, it becomes Nagware. If one does not want it to be Nagware, what's the cost?
It's $30 US for the major version. So I think it's in version 8 right at the moment. And so if you paid the $30, you get all the version 8s forever. And I believe that when they go to version 9, eventually it'll be another $30, but it's been quite a while at $30. They're also marvelous about their license. It's a license for you. So if you've got two or three laptops and you've got a desktop and you've got a work computer, not that you do this at work.
Oh, okay. No. Yeah.
But if you have a work computer, the license can be used for all of those computers for you. So you're not having to pay $30 for all those computers.
So you're not charged by per processor or
until somebody, it's LandMonkey. Maybe you've worked in the tech field before. Yeah.
Client seat or something. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So when you open GSAC, it's completely empty. And you want to do something really cool, but how do you get caches into it?
There's a number of ways you can get caches into it. If you're familiar with Pocket Queries, and that's kind of tied as well to being a geocaching premium member, You can download a pocket query and import it into GSAC. It also has a direct connection to geocaching.com. So if you've got a pocket query set up or if you have a list set up, you can just say, bring in those caches into GSAC automatically. So it's one of those things you kind of set it off and go for a coffee and it will import all of those things. Geocaching.com also has the My Finds pocket query. And surprisingly enough, when you run that, it includes all your finds. I know that's it's really
you
difficult.
You wouldn't have expected that with a name like that.
You can download that and pull that into GSAC and end up with, you know, if you've got 5,000 finds, you'll have the 5,000 records and your logs in GSAC.
5,000. LandMonkey passed that years ago.
Well, I can only hope to follow LandMonkey.
I think we'll all be following LandMonkey for a long time.
Anyway. Squirrel, yeah. Hey, you talked earlier, Kevin, about keeping the data going in the system and that you do have to kind of maintain it a little bit. So, you know, I've got sort of an open question around care and feeding for it. So, you know, once it's set up, what do you do next? How do you, so you've done the My Finds, you've loaded all the caches I have ever found into the, I think it's the default database. Now what?
Well, so why are you using GSAC, I guess would be my counter question. If you're using GSAC because you're trying to do some advanced searching, you're trying to find your Jasmer caches or your 81 caches, then you're probably going to create a pocket query for your area or the area where you're going geocaching and pull those caches in as well. So you can start to search on them. If all you're doing is statistics, you're done. Right. Once you import all your finds and you want to generate your statistics page, you don't have to do anything else. Just every once in a while, pull in My Finds so that you can generate your statistics. So it really depends on what you're doing.
Very cool. One thing I found, because I do use it for statistics, and maybe this is just my own workflow and there's a better way of doing this, Kevin, but I find that if I publish a new cache, Earth cache or an event or something, I have to manually load the GPX file for that individual cache or event or whatever it was into GSAC so that it'll catch that. Because I don't find, well, events I don't have to do, but for my own caches I do, because you don't find your own caches, right? So you have to actually manually load those in individually. Is there a better way of doing that?
You could do them individually. You could just include them in a pocket query, though.
Oh, my caches.
Right.
That makes sense.
So, you know, all the caches around your home, for example, I'm assuming your event isn't too far from home. But yeah, it'll pull it in the next time the pocket query updates. And the next time you go to GSAC and pull the pocket query in, that will all be there.
Right.
And it could include your caches as well. I don't see why not.
Right. Well, okay, I see where you're going with that. So that makes sense. Yeah. I was thinking if the only data source you use is the My Finds. Which has
then you're not going to have some of the caches you need for that, for sure. So you would end up pulling it in either individually, going saying I want GC code, whatever the GC code is, or including it in a pocket query that updates every couple of days. And again, it's feed the dragon, open up GSAC and say pull the pocket query in and let it click and whir, and have a cup of coffee, and then it's there for you.
Very cool. We had a question in the chat from IHAM. Around the licensing. He wants to know, is the licensing tied to a single GC geocaching.com account? He says that they have both personal accounts for each family member as well as one for the entire family.
Wow, that's a great question. I would have to look. My sense is that they don't mind terribly if you use it for a family, but I would have to look. So maybe I can get back to them on that.
If each member of the family... downloaded their own My Finds and imported that into GC or GSAC, wouldn't it work the same way?
If you wanted it to do that way, one of the functions of GSAC is you can have multiple databases.
Yeah,
and it's easy to change the database. So you could create a Jim database and a Chris database and a Jason database and run them all individually with your individual My Finds. The license issue is different. You may have to buy three licenses for that. I'll check. But the other part that's a little bit complex is the connection to geocaching.com. There really is only one connection to geocaching.com by account. So you would have to go and say, reset this up for, you know, Chris, so that Chris could pull in his into his database.
Okay.
So you'd have to be a little bit careful that you remembered to switch to your database before you brought them all in, or you'd bring them all into the wrong database. And that's a common database problem, right?
Speaking of databases, I have also contributed that you can query GSEC with SQL.
You can. That's true. If you're geeky like that, there's a window where you can type in fairly common SQL, and the documentation for the fields and the tables is all there. So you can do joins and all that fancy stuff that puts everyone to sleep if I talk about it anymore.
Not everyone, because I enjoy
SQL. I was going to say, we're interested.
Okay, but
all the nerds' ears perked up.
Oh, SQL. Nice. Brightling says you can have multiple geocaching.com accounts in the app.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's awesome.
Okay.
I wasn't aware of that feature. I thought you had to keep switching them in the geocaching.com menu. You had to keep recertifying them, but that's excellent. And GSAC is that there's so many different ways to do things. LandMonkey was asking about ways of bringing things in, and there's probably four or five different ways of doing any one thing. And that's the power of GSAC. And it's also one of the things that makes GSAC complicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anything that's powerful.
You say, how do I do X? And four different people will tell you five different ways to do it.
Fair enough. Kevin, we also heard from Startcacher in the chat. Said, I keep using my GSAC as a service to my geo friends and others on local Facebook group to find caches they can seek out to meet some criteria they can't find otherwise, especially the alphanumeric challenges, either cache names or owner's names based. That is easy on GSAC and not via any of the other searches. So, yeah, I guess it's challenge checking
or perhaps creating a day of caching that helps you complete challenges. And that is one of the real powers of GSAC. It does tend to bring in almost all of the attributes from geocaching.com. And it has a great wizard once you get that far where you can say, I want caches that start with the letter C, for example, that the terrain and the difficulty is good for beginner cachers. Perhaps if you're dealing with newer cachers, you don't want them, you know, doing the D5 caches right off the bat. It's great like that. So we can talk a little bit about some of the other services. When GSAC, I think, was first created, geocaching.com was maybe still in its infancy as far as search features, and it's come a long way. You can do a lot of search now. So some of that functionality is gone, but there's still some things that it doesn't do well. And I know you had Rock Salt on there last week, and he was talking about some of the features that are coming. So we're looking forward to that. But I just want to mention projectgc.com as well, another popular website. And it seems to be the one that's taken over all of the challenge checking under the new requirements. It's got some really super features. For example, if you get an account with projectgc.com, it will automatically challenge check all of the challenges around you. Nice. You show a map that says you qualify for this challenge. So one of the things that GSAC is good at is challenge checking, and it's got a real competitor now in that aspect.
Mm-hmm. Now, do those two systems use the same kind of syntax for the challenge checkers, or are they completely different?
Completely different.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Number of times at trying to write macros in GSAC, and I'm just not geeky enough.
Wow.
I know. That says something, right?
Yeah.
I've looked at Project GC. It took me, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours to read the documentation. I passed their test, and I've written challenge checkers in Project GC. So,
well, if you read the instructions, you didn't pass our test.
and I thought you were one of the geekiest geeks I've ever met. And there you go, reading the instructions.
Unfortunately, it's one of those ones I don't think you can just wing it. You got to kind of do a little reading.
You are TFM'd.
TLD.
And TFTC. Okay. Any other useful websites out there? while we're plugging other websites?
While we're plugging other websites, there's a great website. I use it fairly regularly after events called Log Them All. And this is not where you keep track of all the places you went shopping. It's not Log Them All. It's a place where you can log all of them. It's Log Them All.
Got it.
Essentially, if you go to some sort of an event and people have their trackables there, you make a list. You just type the trackable numbers in, make a comma separated list or make a line separated list. It does a quick pass through geocaching.com to authenticate your account. And it will, surprisingly enough, log them all.
Who knew?
It will do discoveries on all of them.
But can't you... Go ahead.
Sorry. I was gonna say, can't you do the same thing with GSAC? Can't you have GSAC log your trackables too?
You can as well, yeah. Mm-hmm. But this is a very, very simple interface. And if you're not geeky enough to get GSAC running in full force and figure out how to make that particular macro work, log them all is very, very easy.
Yeah, I got you. Okay.
Yeah. So maybe we should talk just about a couple of the other functions of GSAC, if that's all right.
Please.
Yeah. Yeah, so we talked a little bit about using macros to create statistics, but the one thing that I really use it for is logging geocaches. One of the things that I didn't realize when I first started caching is that my unit was actually keeping track of, there we go, my unit again, my GPSR, squirrel. My GPSR was keeping track of the caches that I found. And I was actually making a note on a piece of paper and going back into the geocaching.com website. The geocaching.com website has long had the feature where it can read my GPSR and bring in that little file and create blank logs for all of the caches that I found. The drawback to that is you still have to go into each one and put a note, even if it's TFTC. You have to touch each one. You can do a very, very similar function in GSAC where you plug in your GPSR. I'm not going to call it unit anymore. You plug in your GPSR. It will pull that file in and apply templates that you've set up. So it'll be a found template, a did not find template. There's a number of other ones that you can create. And it will automatically apply the template and log all of them. So if you're out on a power trail and you do 100 caches, you plug your GPSR in, you pull this file into GSAC, you press the button, go for a coffee, come back, and all 100 caches are logged.
It's super handy for a hashtag geocache road trip for sure.
Yeah.
Well, for somebody with 12,000 caches, I imagine you've done this a few times.
Once or twice.
Like 12,000 times.
All right. So yeah, we've talked about searching to see if you qualify for challenges, et cetera. We talked about logging caches. So yeah, there's a lot of pretty powerful stuff it can do. Now, you mentioned the concept of macros a little bit, maybe to help explain for anybody who wants to know a little bit more about what you're talking about there. Kevin, can you dig into that? Sure. A bit?
Yeah, absolutely. If you can think of a database and you think you're doing some searching, GSAC also has some connections to geocaching.com. It has some ability to talk to your GPSR unit. This is a script, essentially. It would allow you to perhaps do a bunch of searches on your data, maybe upload some information to geocaching.com, or perhaps download some data to your GPSR. I spoke a little bit before about saying one of the macros allows you to create a statistics page for geocaching.com, which LandMonkey uses. Or another common one is to say, the four of us want to go caching. Give me a list of caches that none of us have found. So it's a little piece of code that somebody's written and made available on the GSAC website. You can download it fairly easily, install it into GSAC, and it becomes essentially a button that you press. And it says, you know, find me the cache, and it'll pop up and say, type in the name of the four people you're going caching with. And it will search through the database and create a list of caches that none of you have found. And one of the real popular uses for macros is challenge checking. There are hundreds of challenge check macros. A lot of the common alphabet ones, we spoke about that before. It's, you know, finding caches that start with the letter C or go through the whole alphabet. You'll find variants in there all over the place of macros that you can pull into GSAC and use. There's a couple of really brainy geeks that write them, and they run the forum over on the GSAC website. So you can say, for this GC code, GC, whatever it is, I would like a macro that checks whether I qualify or not. And you can write it if you can figure it out, but you have to read the instructions.
That's funny. You know, we've talked a couple times about using GSAC to run your statistics and be able to put out these detailed statistic pages that are very cool that it does. And I love playing around with that. One of the other things it does through a macro is it has a statistics badges and belts macro that it can print off for your profile, which is kind of cool. It's you know, another way of adding a little more game to the game of geocaching, where you can have your little achievements as you move up through your ranking and your status of, you know, how many micro caches have I found now and how many different countries have I cached in. So I think that's kind of a cool macro, and I enjoy playing around with that one.
Have you got your black belt in micros or yet?
Something like that. I don't know. It's on my profile.
It's on your profile, yeah. So for those of you who are interested, whether Land Monkey's got his black belt in micro caches, you can go onto his profile and check that out for sure.
There you go. Now, we also talked about using it to do bulk logging of caches. And Doramore in the chat said, yes, you can do that, but they're not logged with a glow. which is a valid point, but as Kevin was saying, when you do the bulk logging, and Kevin, I'm going to give my opinion on this, but feel free to weigh in. When you do the logging, your GPSR unit, if you're making field notes, and then you do the download from the the file on the GPSR loads up into GSAC, and it lists out all 100 caches you found that day. It'll actually make that item in bold font, which will indicate that it actually has a field note. And when you open that one up, you can edit the text for that one to add comments about your field note. So if you do like myself, and I think Brian Lang has done the same thing, you have kind of a mental shorthand. So, you know, you just type a couple of characters into the GPSR to, you know, whatever your shorthand is, log was wet, or, you know, cache needed maintenance, or favorite point, just a reminder of, you know, cache number 32 out of your day you wanted to give a favorite point to. So you can remember to do all that stuff. So yes, you could just use a default template and boom, bash everything out. Or you can actually use a default template as a starting point to get content into all of them and then tweak them and then publish them.
Kevin, absolutely. Absolutely. I guess you go make sure you add your favorite points to the ones that were particularly good. And that's interesting that you use a shorthand code. I do the same thing. I didn't realize that was popular. I just have like single letter, you know, cache was wet. That's just C, that sort of thing. But yes, absolutely. When you pull these things in, it applies the template and then it sits there and says, you know, what would you like to do next? You can actually open up each and every one and make notes and add favorite points. And, you know, at that point, you can default what happens with your trackables, but if you decided to drop one at some point, you can do that process as well. So your trackables all balance, and then press the button.
There you go. Yeah. Awesome.
Nice. Now, when I used GSAC oh so many years ago, it was mainly to, you know, massage the GPS or the geocaches a little bit, but to put them into my GPS. That was the easy way to do it at the time. Now with, you know, all the API applications you can get into the geocaches from geocaching.com, you know, in so many different ways. Should we still be using GSAC to massage and pick out those particular geocaches that we're looking for?
Well, sure. Yeah, that's the power of it. I'm all in there and you're looking for a particular set. And believe me, you can come up with some very unique combinations of caches, particularly using the user flag. If you're familiar with that function, you can run a query and say, remember all of these caches. And you can run a second query, say, remember all of these caches as well, and create a union. it makes the easiest sense at that point just to plug your GPSR into your laptop or whatever you're using and just say, put all these caches on my GPSR. That's an excellent function for that. You could certainly export it to a GPX file and copy it over manually. That works as well. This is that, you know, four people will tell you five ways to do it type. But yeah, you're not going to get that list again easily over to geocaching.com just to pull it back onto your GPSR. So,
right on. So I think there's a couple more questions in the chat. Maybe we'll try and grab those. But before we wrapped up on this, is I think we're getting close to the end of the topic for now before we get into the after show. But Kevin, you've actually taught some classes on GCAC before, haven't you, for local caching groups?
I have, yes. Most recently in Victoria, the group over there, they were kind enough to invite me over and show me a good time on the weekend. Boy, we did some crazy caching. My day started at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I found myself on the top of a mountain at 12:30 at night, still wearing the nice shoes that I put on for my presentation during the We had a marvelous time.
Like a true geocacher. Nicely done.
Yeah, and then, you know, they were still like, well, hey, Tim Hortons open and there's a cache in the parking lot. So I didn't get back to my Airbnb until about 2. But yes, we had a great class. One person thought it was intro to geocaching. That was quite a shock when we started teaching them back. but yeah, it's been lots of fun.
I mean, you can't really get into geocaching unless you know basic database skills.
And remember, geocaching is free.
kind of, yes.
Ask yourself the question, how many of you have spent hundreds or thousands on geocaching? Okay.
Oh, how true it is.
Hey, Kevin, on the topic of presenting at events, if anybody who's listening to this podcast was interested in having you come on over to their event and do a GSAC presentation, is that something you'd be amenable to?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that would be great. If you've got an event or something that you would like some GSAC help or some GSAC presentation, happy to talk to you about at what level you want to do it. So we can talk to the people who barely know how to spell it. Right up to pretty advanced. At some point you get to my technical level and I can't help you much anymore, but certainly I can help you understand it and get it set up and understand how it can help you. So yeah, sure, get hold of me.
Very cool. Thanks, Kevin.
Nice.
Right. Well, Chris go ahead.
I was going to thank Kevin. Kevin, okay. That was great. I mean, GSAC is so powerful. You know, it's the Swiss Army knife, which tells you of its usefulness of, you know, all the different ways it can work. We've only touched on a few. You know, if you've got a chance, go download it. You can try it for free, play with it, and download a few of the macros that seem interesting to you and see what they do. You'll be surprised at how quickly you can get pulled into that rabbit hole and spend all your time actually looking at the computer instead of going out and geocaching. Because, well, it's what I do.
Wait a minute.
Oh, wait.
Is that what we want? No.
No, that's not what we want. But it'll actually help you find the geocaches that you're looking for. If you're doing a challenge, if you're completing any of the, you know, the Fizzy, the Jasmer, any of those named challenges, it's going to be an incredible tool to help you do that.
And absolutely. Unlike a real Swiss Army knife, it won't be taken away at TSA.
Unless it's on your laptop. Or are they allowing those on planes again?
I don't know.
We're geocachers. There's always a good chance that we'll get taken away.
It's true. Oh, thanks. Speaking of getting taken away, let's take away some of the next week's shows. Now, next week, January 25th, we're going to talk about hiding and finding winter caches. The week after that, it's February 1st, folks. We're almost 2 months into this brand new year. And what have we done? We're talking about snowshoe caching. And there's no shoes like snowshoes.
That kind of goes hand in hand with winter caches because it's hard to go snowshoe caching in the summer. Not impossible, but more difficult. Continuing the winter theme, in February, we're going to talk about winter games and geocaching on February 8th. And on February 15th, creative cache containers with our guest, Lazy Bones.
Very nice. And again, we want to thank all of our faithful Denali-level supporters. That's Team Squirrel and WorldCaching.com. Folks, if you want to know more about supporting the show, please click on the Patreon link on the CachingNW.com website. Also, a big shout-out to every single one of our patrons who help make this show possible every week. Those folks are Subway Mark, Doramore, Dune Buddy, Kid Vegas 19, GeoNavPros, Wine of Seattle, AckerDoc, OBX Geek, Geek, Camp Clan, B Pen Dragon, Billy Robson, Kev MacD, and Bounce Bounce. So thank you very much to every single one of you guys. We appreciate it.
And we want to thank Bounce Bounce because he is our newest Denali level supporter.
Oh, awesome. That wasn't in my list there. Okay. We'll have to make sure we catch that next week. Thank you, Bounce Bounce. That's awesome.
Very great. We appreciate each and every one of you. And if one of them wanted to contact, oh, let's say Land Monkey, where would they do that?
Well, you know, as always, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope at Land Monkey GC. In fact, back up there.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, there you go.
You have visual aids.
Yes, something like that. And of course, you can check out our YouTube channel, just LANMONKEY on YouTube. And we've often got videos coming up of all kinds of amazing, crazy things we do.
Cool deal. And I forgot my manners here and really should have asked our guest to go first. Land Monkey, please forgive me. So, Kev MacD, forget that Land Monkey said a word. And let's maybe some of our listeners want to contact you about their GSAC-themed event or otherwise. How could they find you? How would you like them to find you?
On geocaching.com, I'm Kev underscore MacD, so K-E-V underscore M-A-C-D. I'm Kevin McDonald on Facebook, and I'm also Kev underscore McD on Twitter. So please feel free.
Nice.
Nice. And now, my friend, how about you?
I'm just Wits End, here, there, and everywhere. Unless you find a Wits End that's not me, in that case, don't contact them because you won't contact me.
Wow. Simple enough. Well put.
I know.
I'm thinking of the possibilities now.
Well, why don't you think of the possible ways people can contact you instead?
You know, you look for Caching NW because if it's Caching NW, it's more than likely me, unless it's not me. See, it only works well once, and then the second time is kind of pitiful. So you can find you can find me on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, Caching NW. You know what? Head on over to cachingnw.com/hosts and read our bios and find all the links that we just mentioned. But most of all, we want to say thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode of Caching in the Northwest. Don't forget that you can be part of the show. You can call 253-693-TFTC and leave us a comment, ask us a question, or send us a GSAC macro any time of the day or night. Of course, you can always email us at feedback at cachingnw.com. Did it again. And your support helps keep quality shows coming. If you like this show, please click the Patreon link on the cachingnw.com website. The show is produced by Chris Umfenauer and Jay Kennedy, hosted by Chris J. and Jim Paulwitz. The show is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 license, copyright 2018 by Chris Umfenauer. And we want to make sure that you all stay tuned for
the after show.
And don't forget our $1 million guarantee. If you send us $1 million, we guarantee to talk about any topic you want.
I was really impressed when we announced the after show with the Echo, and Jim, he had the glass of water in his mouth.
I'm that good.
Oh, yeah. It was impressive.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like a ventriloquist.
Kind of.
Almost the same. Hey, we had a few hashtag FITAS things in the chat, but before we get to that, and we won't forget you guys, we're gonna jump right into that in a few moments. But a couple of things I wanted to talk about and share with you guys. First of all, don't forget, January 26th to 28th, so not this weekend, but the next weekend, is go out to an event or find a cache Friday, Saturday, or Sunday to get your Australia Day souvenir. And Kev MacD, I think you've got an event hosted.
I do have an event hosted. It's going to be a new Westminster from 1:30 to 2:30 on the 28th, so the Sunday. And I don't have the GC code handy, but I can grab it. And yeah, it's if you've ever thought you knew anything about Australia, I have the definitive facts about the top things you need to know about Australia. The top number one thing, we all know that every Australian eats Vegemite.
Oh, yeah.
And so for the people who have never tasted Vegemite, I am going to absolutely forget to bring any so that test Vegemite in a safe and non-gross way.
Kevin, I have to say I did really enjoy the description on your cash page for your event. So
thank you.
That was
fun. Everyone's welcome. Come on out. Watch for the spiders.
Right on.
Are they from Mars?
No, from Australia. They're actually worse.
All right. Another news item I wanted to share with folks here is the, and I think we talked about this on the podcast before, because when I combed through the news stories online and I found this one, it sounded familiar, but it's the Great Balls of Fire returns to Kama Beach, Kamano Island State Park. Washington State Parks, Kama Beach Foundation and partners and my geocachers and the general public to a weekend of learning fun contest, blah, 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 blah. All right. So what do we want to know? It's the 9th annual Great Balls of Fire geocache event. Runs 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday, Feb 3rd, Kama Beach Historical State Park. And then it runs again on Sunday, 9 to 10:30. Nice. They've got, it looks really cool. They've got a bunch of things going on. So they've got a geocaching 101 with Ranger Tina.
Is that where they go in depth with GSEC?
Yes.
Okay.
They've got creating an Earth cache with Prying Pandora on, that's on Feb 3rd. I think that's the Sunday. They learn how to set up an Earth cache. I can tell you the one thing you need to know is figure out how to get landowner permission. All right. It's the part that takes the longest. They have trackables with Ray. I can never pronounce this cacher's name. Ray Del Roble.
Ray Del Roble.
Ray Del Roble. Sure. Thank you. Now I know. All right. That's Feb 3rd. Learn how to set up, launch, grab, and track travel bugs and trackables. There's some volunteering opportunities. There is a CETO event in the area set up for that day. Yeah, actually there's a CETO event on each day on the 3rd and the 4th. So that's cool.
Oh, nice.
And then, and this is kind of the cool thing here. So they have this thing called finding clue balls.
They're not amaze balls.
No, well, they could be. And I think if we continue reading on, we will find that they in fact are amaze balls, but they say geocachers are invited to use their skills to find one of two plastic clue balls from noon to 4 p.m. at Kama Beach or Kamano Island State Park. Those who find the balls redeem them for hand-blown glass balls made by local renowned glass artists Mark and Marcus Ellinger. It's very similar. It's the practice run for what they call the Great Northwest Glass Quest, which takes place from Feb 16th through 25th on Kamano Island. So so I thought that was really cool. So I think the GC code is GC7EYPD. If you're thinking you're going to be in that general area of Kamano Island, which is a beautiful place, by the way, check it out. I saw the story and I thought, that sounds like a really neat event. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Amazeballs.
Apparently it is. GC7, Every Young Pony Dances.
I believe that is the phonetic alphabet for that. Well done.
Bounce Bounce has already rented a cabin for the Great Balls of Fire event.
Nice. Way to go, Bounce Bounce.
And silly me, I was just going to think about driving up there.
Well, now you have a place to stay.
Yeah, there you go. I don't think that's what he meant. Well, of course, that's exactly what he meant. Yes. How else can we misinterpret it?
Knock, knock, knock. Benny?
Now, we have some wonderful FATAS items from our wonderful listeners of the live show. And we're going to start with IHAM, who has an Australia Day event. That's at the Aussie Pie Company in Burien. That's GC7 Hotel 38 Charlie. And Kev MacD, in case you didn't know, your event, as evidence by the research department, says it's GC7GZ4H. So your event is has GC right in the middle of it.
Actually, it has GZ in the middle of it.
GZ. Sorry. Yes, you're right.
GZ.
GZ.
So that was GC7GZ4H, just so you don't get confused and go to the wrong event.
What's one of my favorite bands, ZZ Top?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the Canadian version. We only get 75% of the band. All right. Crickets.
Yeah. IHAM wants to know, and Kevin, I don't know if you know this. Do you know, have any idea when GSAC 9 is due out?
No, I don't. I'm sorry. It's where... 8.7, I think, right now. So mm-hmm. just depends what he's got hidden in his workshop.
Start Casher says, I think version 8 started in 2013. We're at version 8.7. I'm thinking 9 will be sometime next year. In reality, it's when Clyde needs more money.
Seems legit.
Yeah.
I went and saw a movie the other night. Quite a popular show. Not giving anything away, but I admit for the one show, I spent more than $30. And $30 that you spend on GSAC, even if you have to give it away again in another year,
yeah,
well spent, I think.
Definitely well spent. Yes, I had it during version 6 and absolutely loved it. And after that time, kind of got more into smartphone caching and didn't need it to, you know, take in the... I can't even think of the words anymore. The pocket queries and spit them back out. There was, I believe it was a macro that would go, I would give it my email credentials and it would go look in my email, pull out those pocket queries, immediately load them into the database for me and delete the emails out of my inbox. It was absolutely fabulous.
That's pretty cool.
It completely,
yeah, that is cool.
Yeah, completely automated the system.
Nice.
We have one more question in FATAS at this point, and this comes from GeoNav Pros, and he wants to know if the monkey will do some shorthand training for us.
I noticed some of the shorthand that was being suggested there. That was
there set. Was one in there that I wanted to look at. I there's no way I could have repeated it. Here it is. It came from Start Casher.
Yeah.
L and L... BOTLGWT. Lock and lock, base of tree, log was wet.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the little bottle quit.
Yeah. I'm sorry, how do you say that again?
Jim, really?
Like to buy a vowel?
Yeah. Yeah. No.
It reminds me of the days I was visiting Wales. Just about every word.
Oh, man.
That
no vowels
or six vowels altogether, one of the two.
Dear. So yeah, Brian Lang says in the chat, just as a reminder, Chris, that there is no need to pull pocket queries from your email anymore. They're not included in email anymore, and you can get them directly in GSAC. That I think Kevin was talking about that earlier.
Yes, you
as
can.
Well as you know, most of the smartphone apps. If you create pocket queries or lists, most of the smartphone apps now will pull either pocket queries or lists into offline caching for you. So
that's true. I mean, you can still get pocket queries in emails if they're under 500 or under.
Ah, there you go.
But the larger ones they no longer send out.
Right on.
Cool. So that's not entirely true. You can still get them. I have one coming that I've been meaning to turn off for a while and I just haven't done it.
I guess Brian Lang is the big pocket queries.
Yeah. The value there's pocket 100 queries.
100 caches? Is that it, Chris?
Under 500 or 500 or under. Yeah. I believe it's like I have one called Old Caches Nearby. So I like it being generated in case I'm out and about. I can, you know, always go and get that from geocaching.com. From any of the apps that I choose to use. And it's nice to, basically, it's a type of list.
Cool. Yeah, that's handy. Well, I mean, and as someone like myself, I cache both GPS and smartphone, mm-hmm. primarily GPS, but I like to have a smartphone available. And I think a lot of people do the same thing. And definitely just, you know, having pocket queries on the go and
have
your go-to pocket query. You know, mine is my Langley Outwards Unfound pocket query, but, you know, everybody has their own methodology and way of doing it. Like Kevin said, you know, you ask four people and there's six different ways to do it, but.
Well, you've only got six geocaches in that pocket query left, so.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's pretty easy to find. But, you know, you brought up a really good point. GSAC is wonderful if you're traveling. You can take and make all sorts of pocket queries for places you're traveling, even if you don't have data, right? So you make them ahead of time. You can put them into GSAC. You could break them up. Oh, let's say you're going on a cruise. Let's just throw that out, and you're hitting multiple countries. You know, it and might be really nice.
Huh? And you don't want to pay for data on the boat.
Right. You know, it'd be like paying for an extra cabin, just getting the data you need on the boat there. Mm-hmm. You could create separate databases for each one of the countries that you're going to visit. Have GSAC pull in the geocaches for a couple of weeks so you get some good log history, you get some things rolling in there. And then when you're out, you just take your laptop with you. You can download those caches into your GPS as you're about to go out and go have a good time finding caches without data.
There you go.
Yeah, and I was kicking myself on the weekend for that very thing where I didn't download the pocket query and found myself in a spot with no cell service going, I want to be a cache here. Then I spent about 40 minutes looking around just under random rocks. No luck. Oh. I got back to data. I was maybe 50 meters away from where I needed to be. So I'm not going to make that mistake again.
There you go. Yeah, you learn once. Yeah. Awesome. Well, guys, what do you think?
Well, Iham asks, what kind of feedback did y'all get from last week's special episodes? That was 12 kinds of awesome.
Oh, thanks, Iham.
Thank you. I'll let you know, it's been one of our bigger downloads. We haven't heard a lot of, wow, this is great, but it's gotten more downloads in a week than a standard show. So that's got to be good, right?
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, episode 2 is in the works, so the story will continue.
So hold your breath.
The Hitchhiker story is going to continue? Or are you going to do bits and pieces from other books, other popular culture?
No, we're just going to continue the story we're writing, which is in the genre of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Hitchhiker's Guide to Geocaching. We're going to continue that storyline. We've introduced the main characters, and next episode we'll introduce the plot, and people will get a little more into the story, and we'll try and leave a cliffhanger at the end of every episode.
That was very generous how you said we're writing.
Yeah, I thought so too.
So I take it, yeah, you're all writing it then.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, something like that.
Well, just let me know when the falling whales come, because I don't want to be standing underneath.
There you go.
So long and thanks for all the caches. Is that the...
Who knows what'll happen?
Let's say thank you to the mice and be happy with that.
Mm. Or the hamsters.
Or the hamsters.
Oh, yes, the hamsters. Awesome. The royal we, perchance.
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that.
Oh, awesome. I know we need to end, but Starcasher says, my GSAC has every cache in Ohio, Michigan, Indiana, and the Chicago area. Northern Kentucky, the Pensacola, Florida, and Mobile area along I-65 between Louisville and Mobile.
Wow, I bet you that's a lot of caches.
That's one big database.
Yeah. Well, wow. And I guess that just proves the capacity and power of GSAC. And the fact that he can load all that stuff in there,
yeah.
manipulate, play with the data, load it out as he needs it. And that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Brylang says, I have PQ set up to get BC, Alberta, and Washington State.
So, nice.
Nice.
And that must be quite a job. That must be quite a job indeed, because, of course, most of the time they're circles. And if you don't put the circles close enough together, there's gaps between the circles.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be an interesting problem all in itself.
Yeah.
I actually set up pocket queries one time to get the oldest caches in the state. So I did it by year. So look in Washington State for, you know, all year 2000 caches. And then, or, you know, and then did it by months until you hit your limit, and then you back off a month and off you go. Yeah. And that's what Brylang says. You don't do circles, you do date ranges.
Do date ranges. Yeah, that makes more sense.
Very cool. Well,
but as you get newer, those dates get really short and close together.
Yeah, I bet.
Show me all the caches placed in these 2 days.
Well, but I think as well, if once you go through the big effort and get the bulk of it in there,
mm-hmm.
you can keep up with it on a monthly basis fairly easily.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that many that get published per month unless somebody puts out a big power trailer. GeoArt.
That's right.
You still have the job of getting them all in there.
Yeah, yeah, that's, that initial work is going to be a lot. But once it's in, you're good.
You're
good work, Brylang. Nice work.
Yeah.
He says you can use Project GC's PQ splitter to find out the breakpoint in the dates.
Well, there you go.
Nice.
Yep. Star Casher chimed in the exact same feedback. That's cool.
I mean, almost word for word.
Close. Yeah.
Yep. It's nice. It's good to see Brylang back in the chat with two good hands. Well,
two hands.
Two hands, yeah.
Yeah, you got to hand it to him. He's, never mind.
He's a castaway tonight.
Yes, indeed.
Well, folks, thank you again for joining us. Patrons, we love you. We can't do this show without you. Look for some special patron bonuses coming up very, very shortly. Folks, and until next week, get out and get caching in the Northwest.